and Universal Consciousness with your host, Janet Kira Lesson and Dr. Sasha Lesson.
Together, we transform the world.
And now, here are your hosts, Janet Kira and Dr. Sasha Lesson.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Sacred Matrix. And I'm your host, Janet Kira Lesson, and I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Sasha Alec Lesson. Our producer is Deborah DeFranco, and you're listening to Revolution Radio Studio B. And today, our special guest is Lynn K. Russell, and she's an expert on near-death experiences. She's an author, international keynote speaker, workshop facilitator, and Unitarian chaplain. And before I bring her on, I'm gonna have her tell us about her bio because it's very fascinating. And I have a copy of her bio and lots of pictures on AquarianRadio.com. I have a show page for her. So, Dr. Lesson, what would you like to say? At least do a sound check.
I'm eager to hear what you got to say, Lynn.
Okay, Lynn. It seems like you've overcome a lot of obstacles to get where you are in life. So could you please begin by saying hello and telling us your story, your bio?
Oh, well, hello, everyone. I don't know where to begin. I think the main point of my history was that I was assessed as mentally slow. When I was in grade 2, 7 years old. But there's a history to that. When I was 5 months old, I almost died. Maybe I did die, I don't remember. but I was extremely sick, and I did spend six weeks in the hospital. And I had pneumonia in both lungs and whooping cough. And so And I had a very high fever during that period of time. So when my mother came to get me back from the hospital, she was warned by the doctor that I may be very slow mentally. And so she was quite worried whether that was the case. And when I was assessed by the school, then that was like, okay, there it is. It's for sure. And so they never took it any farther. It was like, okay, that's the case. We have a child who's going to be slow. And so it was just a foregone conclusion. And that dictated my life all the way through, because I was put in a special class for slow learners. And it was called the Opportunity Class, and we're talking 1940s. And they didn't know about ADD or dyslexia, which I am. And so that was how it evolved. And then, so that set me up for a lot of abuse and a lot of negative kind of behavior, both at home and at school. But I think the thing that stuck with me the biggest, at least today, is that I didn't know how to make decisions because everybody else made decisions for me. And so when it came time for me to make decisions, somebody would always step in and say, oh, you don't want to do that. And so that was the big thing that stuck in my life. And then when I married an alcoholic abuser. And so at 31, I had a nervous breakdown, and I went into the hospital. And while I was in the hospital, the psychologist there gave me a test, an IQ test, because I told him that I was slow. And he said, you're not, you're not. And I said, yes, I am. I'm just pretending to be smart. And he said, Lynn, you can't pretend if you're not. So he took he gave me this IQ test and told me that I was well above average and in IQ. So that changed my life. That was a whole new life for me. And so I left the alcoholic abuser and took the kids, and I eventually went back to school, but I didn't know how to make decisions. And I was terrified, absolutely terrified, because I didn't have any training in how to be independent. And so that was very scary for me for a lot of years. And I finally came to the point where I gave myself my own approval and saying, okay, I am all right. And that was in my mid-30s.
That's the
background information.
Okay. So then I guess there's a lot of life journey between that. And what got you interested in near-death experiences that you became an expert?
Yes. Well, that came hand in hand throughout my life. My mother was an atheist. And when my grandfather died, I realized that people died. And so that meant that I was going to die someday. And so I was terrified. I didn't know what that meant. And as I say, my mom was an atheist. And so when I went to her to ask her what happened to people when they died, she just told me that you disappear. You stop being. And that terrified me. Absolutely. I was beyond frightened. And I would have nightmares every single night, terrified that I was going to die and disappear. So then in my mid-teens, around 16-ish, that's when I began to get serious about exploring all kinds of different religions and their history and their philosophies and how did they get started and how did they get to where they were today. And so that was one of the things. And I also, I never accepted any, and I never became other than Unitarian, which is very, very, very broad, very broad. So other than that, I never joined any one kind of thinking. And I also became very interested in spirituality. And I had some wonderful spiritual experiences that helped me with growth there. And eventually, I became quite knowledgeable about spirituality and religions and so forth. And I was going to write a book, and I needed to research my subject, and my heroine in the book was going to astral project. And so I needed to find out whether it was really possible for anybody to do what I was going to have her do. And so I started to research, and I came across NDERF, which stands for Near Death Experience Research Foundation. I'd never heard of them before, but I just was fascinated. They also had a branch dealing with out-of-body experiences as well. So I'd never heard of them before, and I thought, this is great. So I got caught up on the chat line, and then Dr. Long asked for a volunteer to do the research for him, for his book, Evidence of the Afterlife. And so I volunteered because I had just retired and had lots of time on my hands. And so that's how I got into the research for near-death experiences. And I just couldn't stop. I was fascinated, absolutely fascinated. Not so much with the stories that people were bringing back, because after a few hundred, you know them. But I was really fascinated with the knowledge and the spiritual lessons that were being brought back. And that's the emphasis of my work today.
What year was that when you started the research?
Now that's a little hard for me to, I think it was 2000.
What year was that when you did the volunteer work?
Yeah, I think it was 2007.
Okay. Okay, so you started collecting the spiritual stories and what people were bringing back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that was very important. Because it verified what I had been studying all my life, and it sort of gave me the answers I was searching for, because I didn't know I was searching, but I was searching for truth. And here were some people that had actually had it happen to them, and they'd been there. So this really was very important to me. But as I say, that was the beginning. But primarily, my interest was to do with the information being brought back.
So, what did they bring back? What did you learn?
So, let's start with
that's the whole book. So, all right. Well, I can tell you a little bit. One of the major things was the oneness, that we've heard a lot about oneness. Most people are.
What is oneness? Explain that to our
listeners. Yeah, oneness is we are all one soul experiencing life in this world as a separate being. But our reality is not separate. We are one being experiencing. And that to me was fascinating. You know, I just loved to hear about that. So that was one of them. The other thing was everything else that I learned was based on that oneness and that we were only one. And it's, for example, people who die have the power to create their own death experiences. And that goes farther because we are creating this life experience that we see as separate. We're creating it every day. And so we have way more power in our lives than we ever thought we had. And so that's the kind of thing that I learned. People who...
I want to... That's a big sentence.
Go ahead.
Head down. So how do they have the power to create their own death experience? What do you mean by that?
Now this is getting a little bit deep, so I hope that that's okay.
Deep is great.
Good. I've actually been told, no, that's too deep for my audience, so that's why I'm a little bit hesitant. Anyway, okay, the source, what I call source, experiences existence. Okay, let's start from the beginning. In the beginning, there was source and nothing, just nothingness. And, well, if there was a beginning, by the way, but if there was a beginning, it would have been source and nothingness. And in order for source to know itself, it had to create. And that we are the creation that it comes from. But we are source itself at the same time. We're not a soul, okay? The soul is source. I hope I'm not being very clear, I'm sorry.
No, it's quite clear. It's the perennial philosophy, you know, that everything comes from the metacosmic void as lila or divine play.
Yes. And so for source to know itself, it must create. And so we are source creating. And through that, we are able to create anything we want to create. We are creating this existence that we are in every second of every minute, even though that we don't think so. We think that we're caught in to this horrible world and things happen to us, but that's not true. We are the ones that create it. We just don't see that. We don't understand how that works, but that's our
life. Our intentions are manifest in what results that we have.
Yes, and another thing, I mean, like, for example, Emotions build on themselves. So if you're really angry, the angrier you become, the more angry, you know, it builds, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. The same happens with love. The same happens with depression. And the same thing happens with all of the emotions. If we complain and think about, oh God, everything's horrible, and you know, then we build on that. And that is what we start to see. So that's one aspect of it.
So we can work ourselves up into a frenzy.
Self-hypnosis, yeah.
Yeah, self-hypnosis.
But it also relates back to our choices. Because if we're thinking negative thoughts, then we make negative choices. Yep. Or we think that life happens to us and we have to just do the best we can.
Wow. Well, we can observe that. That's how it appears to be. And most go through life kind of in a victim mentality. Like you said, that happens to us. We're not at choice. Isn't that part of the design that we created in the first place so that we could kind of go unconscious and have experiences? Or can we experience existence totally conscious? Or does that ruin the movie for us?
I think we can be way more conscious than we are. And it isn't this isn't a put down of people, because I think we don't understand, we don't realize, because we're wrapped up in this whole world of things and work and books and, you know, just everyday life. We get so wrapped up into everyday life, we don't realize that we have the power that we have. We are very, very, very powerful, magnificent beings. And we can create way more than we give ourselves credit for being able to do. And that's one of the big things that came back from a lot, many, many of the people who had death experiences. And I don't call them near death, because to me, the word near disqualifies it. It makes it like, well, it wasn't quite, you know, but it was. These people were actually dead. And so some of them will actually enter into the light. And the light is a being. And that is where all the love comes from and all the creation happens. That's the creator. And people will ask him, are you the creator? And the light will answer, yes. It won't say it's God. It will say, yes, I am the source, or I am the creator, or something of those in that way. It doesn't use the word I am God.
So people have been debating this lately about if you go into the light, you're actually being brought back into the reincarnation, and you're back into the prison planet, and you're not supposed to go into the light, and you're supposed to step to the left and don't quite go in. And So tell us about that.
Actually, you wouldn't have a choice. You are in the light or you're not in the light. That's, you know, and the people who have entered into the light have found out that, first of all, the light is where the creation happens. Secondly, that we are the light. They become the light. They actually say, oh, this is where I came from and this is where I'll return. You know, that is their source. That's home. And they aren't told not to. No, that's the opposite. As a matter of fact, some people see themselves as a physical being after death. And that's common. That's very common to see themselves as a physical being, because that's what they relate to. And so it makes sense. After they've been dead for a while, their guide, they often see a guide, and the guide will show them around and explain things to them. And so the guide will tell them, look in a mirror. And they will look in the mirror and see a light, see themselves as a light, or as they are. They become a spike of light, and then they go into the light. So they are the light. Another thing, how can I? I'm trying to think of ways I can explain that. I'm sorry.
You did that very well. I've read all the Michael Newton Institute books on life between lives, and so you're kind of correlating with that information. I've had my own near-death experiences. Have you ever had a near, or, yeah, I shouldn't say near-death, a death experience? Have you ever had a death experience?
I did, but it was very, very, very small. And I don't know that I didn't learn a lot. It was before anybody knew anything about the death experiences and Dr. Moody's books, but I was very, very ill. It was 1972, and I was extremely ill in bed and had a very high fever. And actually, I thought that this was a hallucination from my high fever until near-death experiences came out and I could see, oh, that's what happened to me. Anyway, I found myself out of my body and in a tunnel. Excuse me, my voice is disappearing. Sorry.
That's okay. You're in this tunnel?
Oh, yeah, just get a drink.
Go ahead, take a drink. Take your time.
So I found myself in a tunnel, and there was a man with me. And this man was dressed like a priest, and I couldn't understand how he could be a priest because I was non-religious. Anyway, he and I were going up this tunnel, and this booming voice came down, and it was male. And it said, take her back, it's not her time. And the man beside me said, but she died. And the voice said, take her back, she has much left to do. And then next second, I was back in my body. So it wasn't, I don't even consider it a real death experience. I think I just, you know, slipped out and in again.
Wonderful. So you learned there's a tunnel, and that's real. Because some people debate it, oh, there's not a tunnel, and some people. So does everybody experience a tunnel, or do they transition in different ways?
Yeah, people transition very, very different way, except there's about four or five different common ways. And the people who go through the tunnel, usually there's more of them than there are the other ways. But that doesn't mean that there aren't other ways. Sometimes either relatives, loved ones, or even a guide, or even the light is there to greet you when you leave your body. Sometimes people find themselves raising out of their body and just keep going up and up and up and up and up, and they find themselves in outer space amongst the stars. Other people find themselves, they leave their body and they find themselves in what is called the void. And it's just blackness. But in that blackness, that some people feel very comfortable there. It's like very soothing. Whereas other people will find it to be very scary. You know, they're wondering what's going on. And almost instantly, a light will come, and they'll see it getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until they arrive at the place wherever they're going to go. And what is that? That people go to different locations. They may go to a seashore. They may go to a beautiful garden. They may go to buildings where there's gorgeous, big, huge, monstrous edifices. They're so beautiful. And so they go to these beautiful places, and it's almost always beautiful, by the way. And they feel this huge amount of love. And some people do go to a negative direction, but every single one, everyone that I studied of negative experiences, when they asked to be taken out of there, they were instantly taken out, right away. And the other thing is that when they were there. They, when they came out, and they would say, "What is that all about?" They were told that was your creation. You did, you created that because you thought that that's what you where you belonged. And back to that creation thing, there was a lady who was in the tunnel, and she said to herself, "I'm making this up. I'm dreaming this. I'm the one who's creating this." And so while she was in the tunnel, she imagined herself to be somewhere else in another space. And instantly she was there, and instantly it was as real as this existence is for us now. Another time was a man who they were trying to explain to him, the guides were trying to explain to him how he took an active part in creating his existence. And so they said to him, "Go ahead, think up anything you want to see." And so he thought of his mother's chocolate cake, and there it was before him, and he ate it.
So I think you said earlier that we are instrumental in our death. How we have the power to create our own death experience. Are you talking about what happens after we die, or are you talking about what happens that leads up to our death? Do we have any choice in how we die and when we die? And
No. I don't know that we have. I'm told that we create the existence that we have in this world up to a point. It's not like where we don't have any free will, because we definitely do. But we do a great deal of planning before our souls come into a body. So our souls come into the body, and that the souls they think of a goal that they want to accomplish while they're here, some kind of goal, whatever it is. And it might be something very small, like raising children, that's not small, but something, maybe say something of value to someone that helps them in their lifetime. What they will do, sometimes it's very large too, like being a prince or a princess or a queen. It's varying, but once they make their decision of what they're going to do while they're here, other than love, that's another one that's an automatic, then they will plan their life circumstances in order to help them accomplish that goal. And so they will think of situations that they will have, you know, while they're here, but not every situation. They do have freedom, you know, and so they'll also think of people that are in their lives, their family and close friends and so on. And they also think of themselves and their intelligence and their experiences and how they look and what race they're going to be in and what country, and you know, the list goes on quite detailed. And it's all and the people and everything are all geared to helping them accomplish whatever their goal was that they had set for themselves when they came here.
So is it possible while you're alive and you're still in this unconscious phase to discover your goals and what you had decided for yourself before you incarnated? Can you find out what your mission is?
Did I find out? I'm sorry, I missed that.
Can you discover your mission, your main goal, and why you came here, what you intend to accomplish?
And you know, that's one thing that people ask me a great deal about. I'd haven't done it for a while now, but I used to answer questions on Quora, and they were always asking me about their purpose and what was my purpose. And our purpose, your goal, whatever that goal is already with you. The minute you are born, you are geared to that direction. So you will automatically do it. You don't have to work toward it. It'll be there for you. You know, it's like, for example, some children are really good with math and some children are really good with music and, you know, or some people are not, you know. So it's the goal, it's the direction. Some children are very good artists, you know. It just depends on the individual. But some children are geniuses when they're born and others are not, you know. So there, but you will be guided towards your goal.
What do you think of Progoff's idea that the highest aspirations of the people that raised you all come together in you, in your potentials?
Well, I think I'm not sure that is true exactly. That sounds nice, but I think that we have more free will than that. And so what about parents who don't have aspirations for their children and don't give them the...
It's not for their children. It's what they have themselves, what they want, their guiding archetype shines like a beacon in the genes of their kids and the way their kids are raised, maybe. Maybe he's wrong, but that's what Progoff says.
Yes, yes, yes. I would think that I would agree with that. But things can be changed, by the way. That isn't written in blood, by the way. I know that most people think it is. But say, for example, you had a specific goal. Some people don't want to do it when they get here. They decide they're not going to do it. And they don't. And then they have to come back and to another life with very similar situation and redo it until they do the goal that they've set for themselves. Another thing is that some people can't do their goal because someone else who was very significant in the accomplishing of the goal was killed through a car accident or murder or something like that. So there are other extenuating circumstances that stop a person from being able to do that. I don't know if you've heard of Damien Brinkley. He was one of the first people who came up with his story. And in his book, he is told after he died and when he was doing his life review, he was told, why did you shoot that man? Why did you kill that person? Because he was a mercenary. So why did you kill that person? Because I had plans for him, and now he has to get born again and do it all again to get to his goal. So that tells me that it's not all written in blood, you know? It's not automatic, that there is a lot of free will in there.
But did he respond? Was there a purpose to kill him, or was he his following directions, or what was that about?
Okay, well, Damien Brinkley was he was in the army, and I think it was during the Vietnam War, and he was a mercenary, and he would kill people, and that was his job, and so he killed this person in Vietnam that had a goal that needed to be done, and he couldn't do it because he was killed. And so then he had to be reborn. The man that got killed had to be reborn and relive a life to get to the point where he could do the goal that he had set up originally.
So who was asking Danny, and why did you kill that man?
I'm thinking it must have been the light, because he was having his life review at the time that this happened. So I'm assuming that it was the light, but I would have to reread the book, to be honest with you, to tell you exactly who.
It's been a long time since I read it too.
Yeah.
I wonder if there was a purpose for him killing all those people. Like, it doesn't seem like that would be a goal coming in and killing people. But I remember in Life Between Lives, there was a Viking that, you know, just went around and plundering and pillaging and killing, but somehow in his life review at the end of it, he learned some high spiritual lessons. I have to reread that one too.
But yeah.
Even though we think it's a negative, sometimes it turns around and it fulfilled some kind of whole higher. But yeah, that just to me seems like that would be horrible to come in and your goal is to kill people.
I agree. That you know, and I don't think that everything that happens is meant to be. Like, I know I hear that a lot, but I don't believe that, because in the first place, because we have free will, and secondly, because that takes away our responsibility, and we need to be responsible in our existence. But yes, there are things that, you see, they don't see, I mean, they being the souls on the other side, that the guides and the your loved ones and so on, do not see death like we do. We have this thing about death, and, you know, I mean, I'm 82, but I still don't want to die yet. I've got too much to do. You know, I think that there's, like, we've got an inborn thing about not wanting to die, but no, it was on the other side, it's like, oh, it's okay. It's just learning. It's just an experience. That's it. That's how they see it. It's
right.
No big deal, you know, so you die. All right, well, you can get doing again.
You can do it again.
You know, from my perspective, when you're killing someone outside of you, it's the attempt simultaneously or resonatingly to kill a part of your own personality.
Yes. I absolutely agree with that. I think that when we create harm, whatever the harm is, that there's a part of us inside that dies. Yeah. Which is sad.
Yeah. So we have this desire to continue life even though we all die. Do you ever see a point where that may not be the norm, that we might live longer? Are there any stories about going into the future and changing
the world? Yeah, actually, yes, there's some people, most people that are on the other side that they don't want to come back. They fight not to have to come back. But some people do. Some people say, no, I have to go back. I'm not finished yet and I've got things to do. So that's on that side of the scale. And here, we have people who want to die. They, you know, whether it's because they are, and I'm not talking about suicide, because suicide's a different bracket, but wanting to die because they're ill and, you know, why bother? You know, it's I'm already going to die anyway. Or they just are not getting anything out of life. They don't enjoy life. I know of quite a few people like that, actually. So they're just putting in time. And sometimes people who have had death experiences come back just putting in time because they want to be back there. And they were forced to come here back again and they didn't want to. So they're just getting it over with.
Right. So when I had my near-death experiences, I was given a choice, of course, and I wanted to come back because I wasn't done.
Mm-hmm.
I did have my guides. I had one time I was out quite a while and beyond what's normal, right? But I was still able to revive my body and come back in.
Sure.
But I kept getting to the point where, you know, I had made decision to come here and I wasn't complete. I had more to do. So I wouldn't want to stay on the other side, but it was lovely. It's like swimming in pure love.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that was my personal experience.
Yeah. I love it. And that's true. That is how it is. And I don't know. I would say that a good 90% of the people don't want to come back. So you're in good company.
Now, when I was over at the other side, I was shown what would happen if I stayed dead. Oh. And it was like I was shown four or five different timelines. And I was shown what would happen to the different people in my life, like my mother. If I stayed dead, this would happen to my mother. If I stayed dead, this would happen to my father, my brother, my sister.
Mm-hmm.
That's my whole family. And so I chose to come back because that was part of the decision. I didn't want to have things happen to my family. And I don't know why I was so important, but I guess I was.
Yeah. And I think I have heard other people who have had that as well, but they, you know, they usually when they're given a choice, mind you, I would guess if they were given a choice and decided to stay, we don't hear about them. But the ones that I've heard about do. Oh, I wanted to tell you a bit more. You asked me about.
Let me just put a little bit on this. It's in a way, it's a dualistic to think that being dead and being alive don't imply each other, because they certainly do. And that there's a point where you can embrace both. And, you know, in a way, we haven't been born yet. We've already died many times. Right. And not only that, that's just temporal, but there's also spatial. We're in many places. Mm-hmm. If we're the whole thing. And so it's just which ones are salient in which circumstances. And any part of you that you deny just gets driven into, if it's totally denied, into demonic, and seen as though it's outside of you, but it's just a resonance.
Yes. Well, of course, you see, I think that we are actually soul living this life, and that, like, what's operating this body, my heartbeat, my blood, and my, you know, all of that, the cells splitting and so on. I think all of that is my soul doing that. That's not, I mean, of course we know it's involuntary, but I do think that that's the soul, and we are connected through consciousness to source. And that's how I think that works. And that's how I think that creation happens, by the way, that we create. And I said about creating our own death experiences. There have been some, for example, you asked me about the tunnel. No two tunnels are alike. People go through tunnels, but some are made of bricks and some are made of smoke and some are rainbow colored and some are black, and I mean there are all kinds of different. Every single person has an individual, and each garden, if they go to a garden, it's not the same garden. They're never exactly the same, because we're each different.
Wow. You said let me tell you something, and then Sasha.
Yeah, I wanted to tell you about some people that I studied. I love these stories. They're quite fascinating. One lady had a son who was quite disabled, very severely disabled. Now, one of the things that happens when you leave your body, you leave all disabilities gone. It's instantly gone. Now, this little boy that was disabled died before this woman had her death experience. So then she dies and she sees her son. But she sees him as if he is still disabled, and she has to carry him because he can't walk. And that's because that's what she saw. She didn't know that when you leave your body, all disabilities are gone. So I thought that was quite interesting. And then she goes into a building and she sees a row of chairs there that are specially made for children like her son. And so she puts him in this special chair and tells him that she'll be back for him. And she goes and has her death experience. She comes back for her son, and her son's not there. So she says, well, where's my son? And the guide says to her, and by the way, the guide is funny, because you'd think most people see beautiful people or big, huge, white, lighted shapes of people. But this woman saw a thin, tall, dark-haired man who was not very attractive at all. So you see, that is so individual. Anyway, she asks where her son is, and he just tells her that he's moved on to his death experience. So that, and she accepts that, and that's it. But the fact that she saw her son as disabled, even though he in real life he wouldn't be, because he saw. The other one was a woman who, when she was, as she arrived on the other side, there were three very beautiful guides that were coming toward her. And her first thought was, oh, I want to be like that. And so they take her to this tall building up, and they take her upstairs, and there's this man there, and he does hocus pocus around her and makes her beautiful. So now she's beautiful. So then she comes out of the building, and it's snowing. She is the only person I've ever read who had snow.
Oh. Anyway,
and she looks up, and there's a raised highway above her head. And so she thinks, I've got to get a car because I need to go somewhere. And she doesn't tell us where she needs to go, but she needs to get there right away. And so she doesn't know how she's going to get a car. And so her guide comes along. And again, this guide is not exactly he's just a gray man. That's what she calls him. And she says to him, I need a car. And he says, you don't need a car. You can travel by thought. And so she doesn't believe him. And so eventually she gets a car, and it keeps breaking down on her. And to me, that is so funny, because how much individuality she has built into that experience. It's just, that blows me away. You know, that's how individual.
I wanted to add something about people's disabilities and how they disappear. So when my mother died, I've always been able to astrally travel, so she came and got me when I was sleeping. This was like day three. Yes. And I was upset because it's like she had visited my brother and she visited my sister. And I said, oh, I guess Mom doesn't love me. She didn't come visit me after she died. So I'm sleeping on the third day, and she comes and she takes me astrally all the way from Maui over to Pennsylvania in the house that I grew up in. And so before she died, she had a horrible stroke, and she was all paralyzed on one side of her body. But she had already repaired her own body, and she was regressing, and she looked about how she did when she was 50. So she's taking me all through the house where I grew up, and it was a haunted house, and she was saying, I took them with me. Now they're over on the other side. So the house is no longer haunted. And then she said, you know, I got to get you out of this because this is dangerous for you. And so she walked me down the stairs from the second floor and down to the front door. And she pushed me through the door. And she said, you have to go back to your body. And then I woke up back here in Maui, went, you know, it's like I got pushed back to my body. So that was fascinating.
Yes, that was fascinating. And other people have told me that they see their loved ones as well after death, and they always see them so much better, like 35 years old, and they were 80 or 90 when they died, and you know, in perfect health and looking wonderful. So that's very common, actually, for those. Yeah. Yeah. And even when you go over there and you see your loved ones, they always look fantastic.
And I wonder if they just show in the form you remember them in for your purpose, or are they? Yeah, that's what I wonder. What was it? why were they because mom showed herself at 50, and I think she wanted to make sure I was recognizable, or was that me creating her at 50 and tell me? Not sure.
I wonder that too. Yeah.
Chris says that, you know, if there's a real need for the person that's alive and the person that died